From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. New Hanover County redistricting of high schools is complete. As for middle schools, the process continues. The Board of Education plans to assign middle and elementary school students in 2021. New school assignment letters are going out next month to about 9% of New Hanover County high school students and 45 Murray Middle School students who will move to Myrtle Grove. Going forward, one of the biggest redistricting hurdles is deciding what to do with Williston Middle School. Officials say this is a key piece of the puzzle. Last month, Vice Chairman of the School Board, David Wortman, suggested Williston become an art school. Now there's a call to make it a vocational school with an arts component. County commissioners recently created a Williston Exploratory Committee to gather community input on the school's future. In recent years, research shows New Hanover County schools have increased the degree of racial and socioeconomic segregation. In other words, high minority school populations are typically also high poverty schools in New Hanover County. With us to explore the redistricting process, the priorities, and the challenges is Lisa Estep. She is serving her second term on the school board and is the current chairperson. Lisa Estep, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us today, Cami Bellamy. She is education reporter for the Star News. Welcome to the program, Cami Bellamy.
Thank you for having me.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. What do you think the major priorities should be as board members work through this process and draw the new maps? What do you find confusing about the process? You can tell us about it on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. As many people know, the redistricting process is fraught for parents, students, members of the community. Cami Bellamy, you've identified in your reporting some of those issues that come up for people around moving schools. So help us understand, what are those issues?
So moving a student at any age level is going to be difficult for the student and the parent. There are considerations with school buses or the distance you have to drive if they're not taking a bus, just getting used to a new school environment. But I think one reason this portion of the process has been so fraught is it started with high school students. You're dealing with students who are on sports teams, have friends they've been going to school with since elementary school. Very close social circles, considerations for scholarships, things like that. Moving a student at that age level can be especially difficult. I look back to my own childhood in 99 in Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools. We had a redistricting, and I was moved in first grade to a new school, and it was no problem. You adjust very quickly at that age to get a new friend group. But then a few years later, at the middle school level, my family moved across town, and that was much more difficult. Your friend group is already set, and having to adjust to a new one is hard. So I think starting with high school always means you're going to get parents and students who are much more concerned about having to kind of start from the square one there.
Lisa Estep, what are you hearing about some of the major concerns as you go through this process from parents and students and community members?
I think, what Cami said is exactly the case. When you are in elementary school, it's really the parents who are involved more. You know, they're the ones who are volunteering, and so they're the ones who are invested in the school. When you get to middle school and high school, it's the students. They're the ones who are doing the after-school activities, and so, they're the ones who you just have to stop and say, do I really need to do this? And they're the ones who you hear from at our forums. When we had three different forums last year, and we heard from both parents and students, and it was really hearing, my student is involved in the school, please don't move them. This is where their friends are. This is where their activities are. We heard a lot of that. We heard a lot of, it's too far. I live a mile from the school now. I can bike there. I can walk there. You're asking me to drive 7 miles, 8 miles, and that was the other big issue of it's just the distance, and with crosstown traffic, this is just too much. So those were the two big issues.
So Lisa Eastep, since you've been on the board, the makeup of the board has changed, and there was a recent election. This had been an all-Republican board for a very long time. Three Democrats were elected to the board. How do you see the redistricting conversation changing as a result of this new board?
Well, I think that we really basically, from my view, and I'm one of seven, I would like to kind of restart that conversation. We have guidelines that the old board kind of defined, and I think this new board needs to define their own guidelines. You know, we've got seven members, and we need to figure out as a board what we feel are important and guidelines to stick to as we go through this process. There are certain things,
mandates.
Yeah, that you really can't work around. You can, but there are fairly significant consequences to those, such as transportation. The farther you move a student away from their home, the less efficient your transportation is, and the more state dollars you lose. And so so that is something that most counties really do have to take into consideration, because that is that can mean an enormous amount of money that you do lose for your school system. So that is something that I think almost every county in the state really does take into consideration when you're talking about redistricting, because it can have a significant impact. So I think the very first thing is those guidelines that you hold to be at the forefront of your redistricting. And then from there, how do you want to go about the redistricting itself?
And so these guidelines,
yes,
which are published, mm-hmm. start with a diverse student body in terms of race, gender, disability, and socioeconomic status is
Correct.
Important and valued.
Mm-hmm.
And you moved that priority to the top of the list?
I did.
Is this still a moving target in terms of setting these guiding principles in stone? Is this a draft? Or are these the principles?
Well, these are the principles for the old board. And I think that with the high school redistricting, that's the first time that I think we really were able to sort of move the needle in terms of, you know, if you look at where we were on the high schools and where we are now with the redistricting we passed, we did change those numbers. The middle school with I think at the end we had four different versions. That we had before the old board, and we were not able to get the support from the old board to pass the middle school redistricting at that time before the elections. And I have to say that if we had, we would have had some fairly significant shifting of the high poverty lines in some of our schools. But there was a lot of outcry for what we were trying to do, and there was not support on the board at that time to do what we were trying to do. And then the new board came in, and you know, it really was a big ask of the new board to come in and adopt versions of the redistricting plan that the old board had looked at for a year and then designed for a year. And so I think the feeling was, well, if we can't do redistricting, let's start with the school. And so that's how the Williston proposal came up. When Mr. Wortman proposed that at the work session, we decided, okay, let's start with Williston. Let's see what we can do there.
And Cammie Bellamy, this is something that you reported on. This is a story that kind of exploded onto the scene. Suddenly there was this new, oh, Williston's turning into an art school. What? Mm-hmm. And there was this outcry from the community. Kind of tell us from where you sit how that idea emerged and how that idea became public, and then what happened after that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say very suddenly is how it emerged. I talked to David Wortman about a week after he made the proposal, and he said, you know, honestly, I spoke to Superintendent Tim Markley maybe the day before about this. It's for a long time we've been trying to figure out what to do with Williston, and this is an idea that
had
that
he spoken to any other members of the school board before he announced it publicly?
I'm not certain about that. Maybe briefly
to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally came up, as you said it did. Mm-hmm. And in the interest of being open with all our discussions, he said, do you think I should propose this to the, at the work session? And I said, yes. I said, let's talk to the other board members, because you really can't have discussions with the full board. You're not allowed to. Right. So, to be able to have these discussions, you have to have them in an open session, period.
So that was in the interest of transparency.
Exactly.
That's
right.
How it came out that way. Okay, Cammie right. Bellamy.
And just sort of as an example of how quickly it came up, Principal Ron Valines of Williston, he was in the room there when David proposed it, and I think it was the first time he was hearing about it, was what David said as well. And to be clear, there wasn't a vote that day. There was no vote to say we're pursuing a change on Williston. It still is completely in the planning stages here. The reaction from the community, even the next day, I was starting to get calls and emails from sources like, high school, are you sure you printed that correctly? Shouldn't that say middle school? For people who have been here a while, they know the history of Williston. Up until 1968, it was the county's African-American high school. It was shuttered rather suddenly by the school board. So there is sort of a sense of deja vu with some older folks who have been around and some Williston alumni who still live in the area. So this is always going to be a very emotional proposal for them, whatever happens with Williston.
As a result, then, of that community reaction, there was at least one public meeting to discuss specifically, Lisa Eastep, what happens with Williston. And when we come back from the break, I'll ask you what you've learned from the community members. You're listening to Coastline. New Hanover County schools are in the process of redistricting. School Board Chair Lisa Eastep and Star News education reporter Cammie Bellamy are with us today. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment during the live Wednesday discussion, you can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some listeners. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, it's a look at the redistricting process for New Hanover County Schools. Lisa Eastep is the New Hanover County School Board Chair. Cammie Bellamy is a reporter for the Star News in Wilmington with a focus on education, as well as growth and development, and many other things. If you'd like to ask your own question on this Wednesday, you can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And Lisa Eastep, just before we went to break, you were going to tell us what you learned from one of those community meetings about the future of Williston.
Right. We had a forum at Williston that I believe, I want to say maybe about five of our board members were able to attend. And that was really, I think, kind of an initial listening session for us to hear community members kind of about their fears and their concerns. And I felt like we learned a lot about that. And some of the ideas I think that were floating around were, number one, that we were going to close Williston. And that was never the case. That was never an idea that we had. It was more about, you know, is there a shift that we can make there that would make it more successful for all the students? And is there a program that we could bring or programs that we could bring to help the students, the struggling students, as well as we would call them AIG students. Is there something there that we could bring to the table that would help really students across the board? You know, what could we do for Williston in particular? So it was really more about learning about the school itself. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't have even characterized what was said at the work session, to back up a little bit, as we were entering into the planning stage. We were really just entering into the learning stage of what we needed to learn about Williston, about the community, about all of it. So we were so preliminary at that point.
And do you think that was a misunderstanding on the public's part? I mean, did they hear this when David Wortman announced the idea? Did they hear it as a policy decision that was moving forward? Was that part of the outcry?
I think so. I think that maybe there was some miscommunication in the community. And again, a lot of it, you know, and I'm not sure how that all happened. And, you know, I think that maybe, you know, hindsight's 20/20. You always wish you could go back and say, gosh, I wish I had done this differently, or I wish we had announced this differently or clarified things differently. But, you know, all you can do is move forward and try to correct the misperceptions. But I think forming the committee, we kept it as wide as possible and invited community members, invited teachers, and tried to keep the dialogue as open as possible for all ideas and all comers. So I think that's been great. And I'm not part of that committee. It's Stephanie Adams and David Wortman who have been you know, doing that. So.
And this is just a question. David Wortman has a couple of young kids.
He does.
Who would eventually be going to Williston.
Correct.
Is that a conflict of interest for him to have a hand in the future of Williston? Or does that put him in a better position? I mean, you could argue he's got more skin in the game. You could also argue the personal stake removes objectivity.
Well, I would say that it would be more of the, I guess it would be the former. I mean, you know, if you have a PTA president who's arguing for making the school better, you would never argue that objectivity. You would argue that they're trying to work for the betterment of the school. And I think that, you know, whether Mr. Wortman's student or kids go to, I mean, his child is in elementary school right now, and I think he's a long way off from being in middle school, so that would be years away. So I don't see that as being a conflict of interest. I see that as him just having an idea for Williston that he brought to the table because it's been a part of our redistricting discussion, and it's one of the schools that we heard the most outcry about during our discussions last year was Williston and parents not wanting to go down there and saying the drive is too far, you know, whatever the reason. But it just, because it's one of the schools that was under capacity along with Holly Shelter. So those are the two schools that students were going to have to come to.
Right. Cammie Bellamy, you produced an investigative report for the Star News on the racial and socioeconomic imbalance in New Hanover County public schools. And we've talked frequently here at HQR about the report produced by the University of North Carolina Center for Civil Rights in Chapel Hill that showed the neighborhood school model between 2006 to 2010 exacerbated demographic and achievement disparities across the public school system. What were some of the conclusions that you were able to draw when you drilled down into that report?
So this was, I guess, about 2.5 years ago at this point that I wrote that story. And you can certainly make the argument correlation doesn't equal causation. But what we found was in the years after 2008 and 2010, when the school board adopted a neighborhood schools philosophy, that especially the downtown schools, that's Rachel Freeman Elementary, Snipes Elementary, Williston Middle, Virgo Middle, schools in that area had become even more overwhelmingly African-American in their student body. I think at the time I did the report, Snipes or Freeman was somewhere around 85% African-American. And then you had schools such as Wrightsville Beach Elementary, Carolina Beach Elementary, which had less than 5 African-American students. And at the same time, there was a correlation with lower test scores at those downtown schools, and they've continued to struggle to raise them. So that's what we found in that study, and that was mirrored by the UNC study that had been done sometime earlier.
So what do we make of the correlation between high minority school populations and low-performing schools? Is that the same thing as high poverty schools? I mean, help us flesh out that link.
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. In the interviews I've had since that story with school social workers and school psychiatrists and classroom teachers, when you put 15 to 20 children in a classroom, and they may be coming to class hungry. In some cases, and I've literally heard this from a teacher, they may have heard gunshots in their neighborhood the night before.
Right.
It is very difficult to get that student to focus if you are one teacher responsible for you know, 20 little bodies.
You could identify that as an adverse childhood experience.
Right, certainly.
Which have long-term effects.
Right.
And mm-hmm. immediate effects.
And the district has made some considerations for that. They have lower class sizes at schools like Snipes and Freeman to sort of reduce the burden or just the strain on resources at those schools. But yeah, again, there is definitely a correlation between students coming from really high-risk backgrounds struggling to meet those same test scores as their suburban counterparts.
We have a call. Susan from Wilmington says her daughter went to Gregory and Williston, now goes to New Hanover. She says she subs in a lot of high-poverty schools. She says we need to address poverty in the area and the problems associated with that. Redistricting won't necessarily solve those problems. Mm-hmm. Last night, there was a meeting, and I have an email from a listener about this meeting who says, read an article this morning that a group just held a forum in Wilmington concerning racism in education. This person says, I gather they seem to be blaming the charter schools for inequality in the system, and a lot of misinformation was put out there concerning charter schools and who they serve. This person says, I have 2 of 3 kids in a local charter, and I'm thankful daily for the quality education they're getting. Children of all races are welcome in all charter schools, and claiming racism is just wrong and frankly offensive to me. Are your guests aware of this meeting or in attendance? Mm-hmm. And Cammie, I know you were there.
Yes,
last night.
I was in attendance. That's not my article he's referencing, because I do remember the charter school information being brought up. I didn't include it in what I ended up writing about that meeting, because I thought the redistricting portion was more interesting. But yes, there was that argument made that there's a link between segregation and the availability of charter schools.
And of course, WHQR's Vince Winkle was there last night as well. This was a town hall meeting. It was characterized as a town hall meeting called Bridging the Silence, a forum about race, reconciliation, and redemption. Community activists, public education advocacy groups joined the North Carolina Council of Churches in the meeting to talk about the trends and the consequences of segregation in public schools in North Carolina, as well as in New Hanover County. It was sponsored by the Southern Coalition for Equal Protections Under the Law, the North Carolina Council of Churches, and Progress North Carolina. And one school board member, Nelson Bollier, attended this meeting as well, and he talks about this issue in New Hanover County and says the problem must be discussed openly.
It's a huge problem, and you know, we have to talk about it. We have to be honest about it. But the point is, if we want to understand how we got here, we can't just look at the last 10 years, the last 15 years. We have to have somewhat of an understanding, a full understanding of race and the issues surrounding race in Wilmington, North Carolina. It's a full history. It's not always a pleasant history, but it has to be part of the conversation. All of it has to be part of the conversation. Otherwise, if you start in the middle, you're going to get incomplete answers and inaccurate answers, and we can't have that when we help with our children.
Lisa Eastup, do you feel like the board is having that conversation in this redistricting process as you're looking at creating a more balanced and diverse student body?
I think that, because we haven't really had the time yet. You know, the board is brand new, and we kind of stepped aside from the redistricting conversation to focus on Williston. But I think that that has been kind of a good starting point, and I guess a good subset of it. And then I think that's going to be the jumping off point, and then we will have that conversation because it is an important part of it. It's an important part of our history and our understanding about where we've been, about the other redistrictings and why it's all been so hard. I don't think that's the only reason, but I think it's certainly a part of it.
Cammie Bellamy, you reported that the former board resisted drawing districts to balance free and reduced lunch numbers. There are certain data points that by federal law can't be taken into account when you're drawing some of these maps. Can you explain what those points are?
Yes. So by federal law, and I think it comes down to a constitutional issue, when a school district is looking at how it's going to move students around, you can't look at an individual student or I think even an individual street and say, we know the student is low income, eligible for free and reduced lunch, let's put him in this school to balance it better. You can't do that. But what you can do is look at the what are called study zones, sort of.
Study areas, yeah.
Study areas, yes, that's correct. And you can kind of do trial and error, see we move this chunk of study zones here, how does that affect the numbers, how does that affect the balance, and then come up with these various different plans that get those different results. So you kind of have to take a bigger bird's eye view of it legally.
Mm-hmm. So then how do you, just from a practical standpoint, manage to create diversity in the schools in a balanced way when you can't specifically look at, you know, a street address and say, this is what we know about this family who lives here? Does that hamstring you in some ways? Or
we actually start with a computer program, and then that computer program maps the whole area, and then that map generates these study areas. And so then you plug in kind of pieces of your guiding principles and say, you know, you want to try to obviously be those attendance zones are part of it. There are certain pieces you can plug into those that mapping software, and then certain pieces you cannot. So then you back out of it, and then you kind of have to adjust by hand. And then from there, it does take hours. And then that's, like I said, we had you look at the capacity numbers, you look at the numbers with mobiles of all the different schools, and then from there you basically try to tweak it by hand, and you have a lot of different sets of eyes on it to say, okay, is this you know, have we accomplished what we were trying to do, and you know, if you look at what we did last year, we ended up with four different versions of, and that's really four different final versions of probably 20 different versions of the middle school maps, after all was said and done, of trying to accomplish changing the numbers, changing the socioeconomic numbers, the high poverty numbers at those middle schools. So it was a challenge. And then we didn't end up getting it passed. So it was a real challenge to do that.
We have an email. Chris writes, thank you for taking a look at this. Would love to hear from the Board of Education why they have not postponed moving 45 students from Murray Middle School. Why are these students being singled out, he writes, for action while the board reconsiders the fate of all other students in the district? It's clear, he says, the board has not considered the pain that they are causing these students who are not being given equal treatment. He says, I'm not against redistricting and agree much has to be done to relieve the pressure on our schools. I just think it's patently unfair to single out a small group of students for immediate action while no other students are being asked to share the burden. Lisa Estep. Mm-hmm.
And if we could have delayed it, if we could do without redistricting, obviously we would have, as Cammy said and I've said, redistricting stinks, especially for middle school and high school, but specifically for Murray and for that population, we couldn't wait any longer. They didn't have capacity. They didn't have space. And I spoke with the principal on several occasions and said, you know, where are you putting these students? And they were putting them in common areas. They were putting them, you know, in some cases in hallways, but in the library, in common areas that meant that all of the students then couldn't access. So what the board decided was, you know, what were the smallest number of students that they could move in order to get back those spaces. And we did that in conjunction with the school.
And there is an appeals process that parents can
undertake.
There is
an appeals process every June that the parents can and the students can apply for to be able to ask to come back or to appeal to come to stay at the school. But you have the choice of moving, and it's do you move a large chunk of students so they all can stay together, or do you move a smaller chunk? And honestly, Myrtle Grove is overcrowded as well. So if you move a larger chunk, then you're transferring the problem to that other school. So the best solution for right now was to move a small number, and then any more students that are coming online, because there are actually some new neighborhoods being built as we speak in that area, and so those students will be going to Myrtle Grove. So we had to allow for that future growth at the same time.
Krista writes, if Williston becomes a high school, who would provide services to the middle school children in the dual language program at Gregory, who receive many services and classes at Williston Middle School? Who would teach them PE, computer classes? What sports opportunities would they have? If it is not a middle school, what about the other resources the students need? School counseling, AIG, speech therapy, etc. The children in Gregory's immersion program have a right to have the same opportunities as children at other middle schools.
Well, again, since we haven't made any decisions, I can't really speak to that, other than to say that they wouldn't lose any services. Anything that is available and would be available would still be available to them, and you know, one way, shape, or form, I can guarantee that, because it would be a middle school. But in terms of concrete answers right now, since we don't have any concrete plans yet, I can't say. But certainly we would not want to take away from what was going to be their pathway, presently.
And she also asks in a separate email about overpopulation in the high schools, mm-hmm. and why isn't bond money being used to build a new high school? So I'll let you answer that when we come back.
Sure.
Talk about the possibility of another school bond, perhaps.
Sure.
You're listening to Coastline. It's a look at the redistricting process for New Hanover County Schools. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. Email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this short break, we'll have one more segment for you to get your question or comment in. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're exploring how the New Hanover County Board of Education is proceeding with a complicated and sometimes fraught redistricting process. With me now, Lisa Estep is the board chair for New Hanover County Public Schools. Cami Bellamy is education reporter for the Star News. She also focuses on local growth and development. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. It is the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. So just before we went to break, Lisa Estep, a question about using the school bond money for a high school. Where is that idea?
Sure. We are in discussions now about, there's some question about the state proposing a bond, and we are in discussions now about with the county commissioners about a local bond, and when that next local bond will happen. Building a high school right now is about a $120 million proposition, and that would eat into most of a bond that we would propose. So our thought is we have property out at Sidbury Road, which, our CTEC high school, our CTE high school, which came online last year or 2 years ago, we'll be moving out to that location. Right now it's being used as a swing site. And for our elementary schools, they are going to be moving out in the fall, and CTEC will be moving in. and then we'll be expanding. And what we would like to do with that property is also build a middle school at that site. And so what that would allow us to do is then turn Trask Middle School now into a ninth grade center for Laney. So that would alleviate the overcrowding for our high school up there. And we would have to be, you know, have to eventually do some redistricting there. But that would allow us to kind of do sort of a mini redistricting and alleviate the middle school overcrowding, and while also not have to build an entirely new high school. With CTEC coming on board and also being able to expand, I think would that's going to allow about 400 students at full growth. Isaac Bear might also be able to expand down the road. So those are a few more students that we could handle there. So we've got some really exciting plans in the works to work around, you know, this overcrowding that we have. I think that, you know, a middle school proposal kind of cuts that number in half for the bond. So that's really what we're hoping to achieve in the near future.
Cami Bellamy, you recently reported the board dismissed an investigation request that was brought by a parent group, the Southern Coalition for Equal Protections Under the Law. Mm-hmm. What are the complaints from this group?
First of all, I would say declined rather than dismissed. They did take the issue very seriously and looked at it, as you know, Lisa and I have talked about in the past. The six incidents outlined in the complaint are largely things that have been or gotten a lot of media scrutiny in Wilmington over the last few years. There
had already been in the
these were already out there. There were the racial imbalances at the Spanish immersion program when it was housed at Forest Hills. Two former employees of New Hanover County Schools who have been since accused of sex crimes against children, and a girl who was a Hoggard student at the time of her sexual assault, who alleged that administrators did not do enough to keep her attacker away from her.
The allegation, I think, was that the attacker was actually protected more than the victim.
Yes, she has made that allegation. Yes. So those are the specific cases in that complaint.
Right. And this meeting that you attended last night, mm-hmm. Cami Bellamy, and that WHQR's Vince Winkle also attended, had a number of speakers, including the Reverend Dante Murphy, representative for this Southern Coalition for Equal Protection Under the Law, is what they're calling themselves, and is president of the Pender County chapter of the NAACP.
The cry was loud and clear for justice to children and families in neighboring New Hanover County. I was personally moved with indignation and a sense of urgency when initially briefed by parents and concerned citizens of New Hanover County that the school system's top administrators were negligent in their handling of complaints involving child sex crime abuses and discrimination.
And this has been something, Lisa Estep, certainly some of this may not have risen to the board level, but what is your answer to this? I mean, there are a couple of issues here. There was one longtime New Hanover County school employee who had racked up complaints over a series, over, I think, a couple of decades. Is that accurate, Cami Bellamy? It was almost 20 years ago?
I've spoken to a parent who says she submitted a complaint in about 2003, 2004.
That's the earliest?
Yes.
Then, okay.
That's when her complaint was dated. The school district has said to me they did not receive it at the time, so there's right now that dispute about when it was received.
So there's a disparity in the actual...
that's correct.
Whether the complaint existed, whether they got it.
Right.
Okay. But what is your answer to that when there are murmurings around a teacher and inappropriate texts or inappropriate behavior? Why wouldn't a school administration act quickly to just root out the rotten apple? I mean, why would any kind of repression of that go on, or ignoring of that kind of thing?
I can't tell you why. I can't speak to what happened 20 years ago. Nobody on the board was around then. The superintendent wasn't around then. I can tell you the feeling and the way it is now. And I can tell you that that's not the way it would happen now. I can tell you that the complaint or the packet of information that was delivered by Dante Murphy was reviewed by the entire board, which, again, as I told Cammie, was not something that we had to do and wouldn't have happened under the prior board. But I felt like it was really important for the new board to walk through what happened with all of those cases and see how the response was by administration, by the schools, because all of them, or most of them, I believe, were school-based issues. So there are many levels that exist before it gets up to the board. So you're right, some of them don't get all the way up to the board. I think that what I can say is that we can always review and look at ourselves to say, what can we do better? And I would hope that is being done, that is constantly being done. I would say that this board will take some time to review to see if there's anything else that we can do to tighten up our internal controls. But in the end, you know, we are a quasi judicial board, so we have to stay neutral. And we are actually, I think, the fourth level sometimes of the review process. So there are many levels. You know, you can go outside the school system and also, so we are not the end of the road, but you can go outside the school system and also, you know,
you're
ask for reviews.
You're talking about law enforcement?
Exactly, or, law enforcement or other courts. In terms of another response that our board is doing, we have formed a Title IX committee to look at our response to sex discrimination in the school system. Even though that there are new guidelines that are being issued by the federal government, I don't think that we need to wait on that. I think that we need to formulate our own response, which I have a feeling will probably be a little tighter than what the federal government has deemed that we need to be. So, because we take the safety of our students very, very seriously. So we always should look at, okay, what can we do better? What can we do differently? So that has been a response to the new board coming in and saying, you know, again, what can we do? What can we do differently? What can we do better? What do we need to get out to our students? What do we need to get out to our faculty? How can we keep our students safe?
Allison writes, neighborhood schools only work if neighborhoods are integrated by class as well as race. We have way too much NIMBY, which goes along with the whole ethos of rugged individualism. Our hope from the North Carolina Council of Churches, which was part of this forum last night, this town hall, is that people bother to have conversations. That's why we are inviting all churches, especially churches in the neighborhood of Williston, to host listening sessions for the community. There's a lot of power in storytelling and people coming together. And she signs it, Allison Mahaley, Chair of North Carolina Council of Churches Education Committee. Is there a legacy here, possibly from the old board, possibly from a larger strata of the community of racism that is now coming out in this way? I mean, Lisa, I understand you've characterized the new board as having different kinds of conversations and a willingness to go different places, and you've identified the fact that you brought the importance of diversity up to the top of the priority list for mm-hmm. your guiding principles for
yes.
redistricting. But are you going to have some stuff to wade through in terms of what has happened in the past? And is it a fair characterization to say that some of the policy decisions in the past have been racist?
I am not going to characterize. I can't see inside someone's mind. And I would never say that. I'm going to leave that there, because I can't see inside someone's mind and guess what's inside their heart. And that's not my call. All I know is that, and what I will say is I will give the old board the benefit of the doubt. They had their beliefs and their belief systems, and they did what they thought was right. And so this new board is going to do what they think is right and what they believe in. And I think that it's a, we were talking about this earlier, it's a newer, younger, or it's a younger board. When I started on the board, at the beginning of December, I was the second youngest serving board member. In one night, I went to the second oldest serving board member. So it's a very different board. And so we have to find our direction and what's important to us.
Fair enough. Jessica writes, thank you for taking my question. She says, we're a village who must care for our children. How will redistricting help impoverished minority children perform better? If we create a balance of demographics, how will this address bigger issues, such as loss of sleep, hunger, inability to focus? I see that it could affect performance indicators such as test scores. But will this be just falsely increasing those numbers and not addressing the bigger problem at hand? That's a great question.
It is a question, a great question, and I can't answer that one, honestly. I think that is something that we're going to have to continue to grapple with. When you have students that come in and, after I leave here, I'm actually going over to Mary C. Williams, and I've volunteered over there for 3 years and a couple different, two or three different classrooms. And
what do you do there? As a volunteer,
whatever they tell me to do, I'd love to go over there and just hang out with the kids and read and do math, and that's about that my math level at this point. So it's just a great environment. They're wonderful. So, you have students that have just unimaginable things happen to them,
right.
And sometimes it takes them, they arrive to school on Monday and it will take them until Tuesday to go get over what happened to them over the weekend. And then again, they'll ramp up again starting on Thursday because they know they have to go back to it over the weekend. So it's really hard to keep them in that learning environment. So I don't know that I have the answer to that. And I would leave that to the experts.
Cami Bellamy.
I can speak to this a little bit, not as an expert at all, but as someone who's interviewed a lot of these experts. I think the logic of better integrating schools from a socioeconomic standpoint is that you'll have a classroom that, referring to my point earlier, maybe has fewer of those high-risk students, so the teacher, the TA, the school social worker can focus a little more time with each of the students that needs it. Make sure, say you have a classroom with 10 students that need that social worker attention versus one with three, you know, that's a big chunk of time extra that you can give to each of those students. And I've also interviewed people who were going to school here right after integration happened, and they said for all the pain of Williston closing, there were some benefits to being in an integrated classroom. I spoke to someone who was a Black student at Williston, and they went to New Hanover, and then for the first time they had white peers, and their white peers were saying, why aren't you trying out for this club? Why aren't you applying for this scholarship? And it was something that no one had ever told them to do before. So I think when you're in a classroom with someone from a different background, it introduces you to all sorts of ideas that you've never been exposed to before.
What is the answer to the trailer situation at this point? Cami, I know you've taken a look into some of that in terms of whether there will be more trailers at Murray Middle School. Where does that stand now? I know it's a short-term solution still.
I can't speak specifically to Murray, but I know at Wrightsville Beach, for instance, they're getting rid of five. So that's
progress. They're getting rid of them.
Yes, completely getting rid of them.
We have an agreement with the town that we have to do away with a certain number of the trailers. We cannot have all the trailers that we currently have there now. So when Wrightsville Beach is finished being built out, we will actually have less capacity there at the end than we do now.
We have an email. Somebody's asking, wouldn't a new high school in the Autumn Hall area have been a good idea on Eastwood?
Sure. It'd be great if they could have given us the land. If we could have talked them into it, I'd have loved a high school there.
And that's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Lisa Estep, Cami Bellamy, for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Coastline's producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.